Raptors in action tonight. They're down in Orlando, taking on the Magic again. You can hear that game right here on TSN Radio. And our Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg, is in studio.
I'm tired of the Magic, man. I've seen enough of them over the last 2 weeks.
Three times already, right?
Yeah. How, like, they don't play them until the end of the season after tonight.
How much scouting goes into playing a basketball team? Like, in the NHL, like, you get like a sheet. You might get a quick little video session on what their power play looks like. How much advanced scouting does a team do before they play an opponent?
Like, normally pretty minimal during the regular season. The way they do it is they'll divide the season up into, like, segments, 5 games, 6 games, whatever it is, and then they'll give each assistant coach an opponent to prepare for a week or 2 weeks in advance. But aside from that, like, it's usually pretty minimal during the regular season, and then it's in the playoffs, obviously, right, where you lock in on a team. But that's why it's interesting you asked that question. Now it's like, I've been so impressed over these last few weeks with how specific the game plans have been going up against, especially the stars, right? Because they shut down LeBron, then they shut down Kawhi, Damian Lillard literally shut down Joel Embiid, 0 points. These are things you normally don't see into the playoffs when teams really try and zero in on, like, one guy, or this is what this team does. But it seems like Nurse, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about Nurse. I mean, he's an early season coach of the year front runner right now. He and his staff are really doing a great job of getting these guys prepared for each game.
Does that mean they have a smart team? Because in the NHL, you can draw up game plans, but not everyone can absorb them and then apply them, turn it around, and 12 hours later and do it in a game. Does that mean they got smart players?
I think we saw that during the playoffs, too, is that's one of the reasons why they're so great defensively. Right. I mean, obviously, they've got a lot of length and versatility in Pascal Siakam, guys that can cover OG Anunoby, guys that can cover multiple positions. But the IQ stands out more than anything else. Guys like Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry, like, these are not the quickest players, the most athletic players, both of them now on the wrong side of 30. But they've got guys, you can throw Fred VanVleet in there, even as a young guy, that are just really smart players. So it's not just about being able to switch and having the athleticism and the versatility to guard all these players. It's like, okay, well, you've got to know, first of all, who you're playing against and what that guy is trying to do, and then how to direct traffic, specifically Marc Gasol, and the way that he directs traffic out there, the way that he is vocal and communicating and helping out the younger guys. As much as, I mean, people are he's taken some heat this year, Marc Gasol.
Well, offensively, he's done nothing.
Yeah.
Like, offensively, he is not bringing anything to the table at any point.
But he's the 7-foot Kyle Lowry in that sense, in that you can't always measure the contribution with the numbers, because, like Lowry, so much of the value he brings is with the passing, with the defense, all those intangible things. And even though, and he's pretty hard on himself too. He's been super frustrated. We've seen it a few times where he lashes out at the refs or even himself, but the Raptors are so much better, especially this season, as a result of having Marc Gasol, than they would be without him. And I'm not sure that the casual basketball fan sees that even now, even after shutting down Joel Embiid.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that Nurse and company, they appreciate what he brings. And his minutes, they're like, you knew he was going to be subject to kind of easing into the season. He's mid-30s now. He played more basketball in the past 12 months than he has at any point in his career.
Played in the Worlds, won the
NBA
Worlds.
NBA Finals, wins the World Cup. Late into the summer as well, gets into camp. They're in Japan. Like, he's
those
done a
parades
lot of
had to be pretty exhausting too.
He's the way he went over after them, they would be.
Like, he was the captain of both parades.
He was captain of the party boats.
Right. Yeah. So you kind of it's almost like a catcher hitting early in the season. Like, he's concentrating on his pitching staff. He's concentrating on kind of easing into the season and making sure.
That's a good analogy I've never heard before.
And you always see it. The catchers, it takes them a while to get their hitting going. It feels the same way with Gasol. Like, because tactically, he's playing the way you would expect him to play. You know, defensively, help defense, ball movement at the perimeter, even in the paint, but he just isn't hitting shots.
And he's actually shooting the three ball relatively well. Last I looked, it was like high 30s, low 40s in the percentage from beyond the arc. What's really bizarre is how poorly he shot the ball inside of the arc. I mean, he was never, even in his prime, he was never a great post-up player, and obviously as he's gotten older, that aspect of his game has declined, but he's better than how he's shooting right now around the rim. I think last I checked, he was 27% from inside the arc, and that he's like a career 50% shooter from inside the arc, maybe even better than that. So there's going to be some regression there. He's going to, those numbers will climb, and you're right, at some point he'll probably get his legs under him and the offensive numbers will be better. But if there's anybody on this team that you can sort of just almost ignore the offensive numbers, the shooting numbers, the scoring, it would be Gasol, because at this point, I mean, it's pretty clear what value he brings, well, especially against the, in those matchups like Embiid or Vucevic.
He's got a shield. He's got two shields up. They're 13-4. So nobody's freaking out about anything right now. And they're a top 10 efficient offensive team anyway. Right. So it'd be one thing if they were struggling to score or they were losing a lot of ball games, you'd start to look at a guy who's capable of more, guy that's getting paid a lot of money, but you don't have to. Like, it could not have been a better start, even with the injuries have been a positive, because all of a sudden Boucher's got to play and Hollis Richardson's got to play. All these guys have to play, you know, or Jefferson. And you get these guys who get Terrence an opportunity. Davis. Terrence Davis, who did play opening night.
Yep.
Like, he did have a good camp and they gave him an opportunity to play, but he's getting now upwards of 24, 25 minutes a night, and he's confident. Like, we had Nick Nurse on with us yesterday. And I was watching the game a couple of nights ago. I'm like, this guy is, he took 8 3-point attempts for an undrafted rookie. Like, that is, that's a green light. Like, I'll give credit to Nurse because
empowering him to do it.
He hit three of them. You know, it's not like he's throwing up bricks consistently. And
9 points, 8 shots. He'll take
getting aggressive. He was getting in the paint at times too. But I'm not sure he gets this opportunity. He won't get this opportunity.
Well, wasn't that the big concern when Lowry and Ibaka were healthy? They were running like a 7-man rotation. Yep. They were struggling to find an 8th guy, couldn't locate a 9th guy.
Yep.
And now with both those guys gone, they're running an 8 or 9-man rotation, which will make it 10 or 11 when they get back. In the NBA, losing two of your top 7 players can never be a positive, and somehow the
it's
the
usually
Raps
a death sentence.
Yeah, they should be 6 and whatever, 11 or whatever it is, but they've somehow spun it into a really positive development for their team.
And I was concerned, like most people, once Lowry and Ibaka go down. I think even if Nick and the coaching staff are being honest with you, they'd probably tell you they were concerned too, because you're right. I mean, they to start the season, the plan was 8-man rotation. The 8 returning players, the guys they trusted, the 7 guys that you talked about, as well as Patrick McCaw, was going to be the 8th guy. And then McCaw never really figured it out. He was battling the knee injury and then had surgery. And then Ibaka and Lowry go down, and you're left with a 5-man rotation.
Right.
And
Lowry was playing a ton of minutes.
And he was playing great. And Ibaka was playing maybe the best basketball of his career, too. If those guys, it's so interesting, because if those guys don't get hurt, is Chris Boucher playing now? Probably not. Terrence Davis, maybe. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, probably not.
And they would be so much worse going forward. Like, they may have the same record. But for the course of the season, these guys getting hurt, probably the best thing that could have happened for the Raps.
Well, you can't send those 3 guys back to the bench. Like, those guys are in the rotation now. Maybe the minutes go down once everyone gets healthy. But you're playing Boucher, Hollis-Jefferson and Terrence Davis
for sure,
going forward. So, yeah, I mean, I think the good news here is you can afford to pace yourself throughout the course of the season, which is something that they should have been doing anyways, but would have had a hard time doing without the depth to justify it. So now you bring Lowry's minutes down when he comes back. You need to bring Van Vliet's minutes down. Yeah. I know he's still a young guy, but man, at that size, taking the beating that he does every night and playing the minutes that he's playing.
I like his no load management attitude, though. It's like, I need the anti load management.
Oh, when you're undrafted, he says it all the time. Play me 48 minutes. I'll play 48 minutes. Sure, why not?
Right. He's dying for that type of vindication. I mean,
and he's looking to make some money in a few months. So, play me 48 minutes.
Did he sign with N1?
Yeah.
Because he was the unsponsored shoe guy for a while.
He's got those cooking now. I've seen those online. Now, Josh Lewenberg in studio.
Boucher was the player of the year in the G League?
The MVP.
MVP and the defensive player of the league?
And defensive player of the league.
Is that generally a precursor to a good NBA career? Because like, you don't hear about, it's not like, you know, you're the best player in junior. This is not a natural transition. That wasn't a guarantee that he'd become really good in the NBA, is it? What's his ceiling? What can he become?
The level of competition, the difference in the level of competition is night and day. There's such a massive disparity. The Raptors had a former G League MVP in Lorenzo Brown, and he's playing overseas now. He's a player that they like, but it's such a tough jump to make. And a guy like Boucher, Boucher was so interesting, still is so interesting, I guess, because he's not even close to as young as you would think that he is. He's already been in the league for 3 years, and he was already an older rookie. Like Siakam, he picked up the game later in life. So, like, age-wise, you don't associate the older guys, the older young guys, with having that high of an upside. Mm-hmm. And then you just look at the body type. I mean, that, I think, was the biggest question, whether or not his game would translate in the G League.
So thin.
So thin. And in the G League, you don't have those big physical dudes that you do in the NBA. So would that aspect of his game translate? That was another big question. But there was this intriguing skill set, the quickness, the length, the versatility, the three-point shooting at that size, and what we're seeing now, which I didn't expect this. And I'll admit, I didn't watch a ton of them in the G League last year. I did not expect the offensive rebounding we're seeing now, because that, up until very recently, was the Raptors' biggest weakness as a team, rebounding in general. And they were giving a ton of offensive boards. They weren't getting very many themselves. I tweeted this stat out earlier. The Raptors, through the first 10 games, were averaging 7 offensive rebounds a game. Over the last 7, they're averaging 12. So an increase of 5 per game. And Boucher and Hollis Jefferson were responsible for 65% of the Raptors' offensive rebounds over the last 7 games. Mm-hmm. Boucher, I mean, he's been, he's just, those two guys specifically bring so much energy off the bench. And those are the perfect guys. Those are the guys you want to have coming off the bench. The guys that are going to lift that level of competition when they come in. So it's sort of like almost accidentally here, they've stumbled into this really well-suited rotation where you've got guys that,
Well, and I think it gives Nick Nurse an opportunity to keep the pressure on a couple of guys. Like, you know, when Kyle comes back, he's playing. When Serge comes back, he's playing. But OG Anunoby is not guaranteed anything. Now, I've been impressed with him. I think he's played well. But you can point to someone else and say, Terrence Davis might get your minutes.
Norman Powell.
Norman Powell is the other guy I was about to mention.
Who
those are
one,
the two
one
guys.
Game is great, the Norman Powell of like the playoff Norman Powell, the Milwaukee Norman Powell, and then the next game, he might go scoreless.
Those are the two guys where this is a career making opportunity for them. Mm. With Leonard and Green leaving, that's them.
Right.
Like you're looking at the wing position where these guys can both get minutes and listen.
OG's still too young, though. I mean, it's an opportunity,
yeah,
but
Terrence Davis is a rookie, right? Like, I'm not talking about some 28-year-old grizzled vet who's like, I might. Like, the point being is, Anunoby, yes, he's young, but he's not raw. Right. Like, he has the ability, and I think he's played fine. I'm not saying I have an issue with him. Again, they're 13-4. I'm just saying if he slips, those minutes can go somewhere else quickly. And this is not a developing team. This is not a team that's like, well, we're 4-13.
Right,
we have more faith in Anunoby long term, so we've got to play him. Nick Nurse is going to coach to win every single night. And if Davis is that option, he's going to play.
And he's Fred VanVleet through and through, right? Terrence Davis, like literally the same story, undrafted, bet on yourself, all of that. But even just that mentality, he's the type of guy like Fred that the second you give him a sliver, just open that door a little bit and he's kicking it right open. So a guy like Norman Powell, absolutely. I think Powell way more than OG. OG, I mean, he gives you something every night on at least one end of the floor.
Yep.
And the organization really high on him. He's having a great start to the year. Norman Powell has already been sort of, I don't like using the word called out, but he's already been challenged by Nick Nurse over the last few weeks. He needs to be more consistent. He hasn't been consistent. So I think he's the guy that once everybody gets healthy, if he's not playing well and doing it consistently, then Terrence Davis is the guy that's breathing right down his neck.
Absolutely. Josh Lewenberg, our Raptors reporter in studio.
Nick Nurse seems to be the biggest star on this team right now. He's getting a lot of attention, much of it well-deserved, him and his coaching staff, I suppose. What is different about him than other coaches? What makes him unique?
Well, I think...
Other than the guitar playing,
he's literally a rock star.
Yeah.
I think for coaches mostly, I think a lot of it is right place at the right time. A lot of it obviously is having the right personnel, and I'm sure Nick will tell you that both of those things are a factor with his success. But there's a small handful of guys in the NBA... coaches that really move the needle, that tactically, strategically, that side of things, the X's and O's, that they bring something different. They're just creative and innovative in a way that certain guys aren't, and I think Nick is one of those guys.
Is he more innovative on the offensive side of the ball or defensive?
Well, we thought offensive.
That's right, based on his role.
That's what we assumed, as an assistant coach, he
was the guy that helped the Raptors revolutionize their offense, change the way they played the year before. Ultimately, he was hired as the head coach. And when he was hired, he was known as an offensive guy, an offensive guru. But this defense right now, even in the playoffs, with some of these funky looks, the box and one and all of that, that's been the end of the floor where I think, one, he's really raising eyebrows.
Right.
And two, the Raptors have clearly made their name and built their reputation on that end of the floor. So I would say that that's probably been more impressive from Nurse. I just like, I mean, even off the floor, and you guys see it, you guys hear it when you talk to him, the dude is just, he's laid back.
Yep.
He's chill. It's so, sort of like, I don't want to say, I don't want to knock Dwayne Casey, who of course did such a great job here, and just because one guy is one way and the other guy is another way, there's a lot of gray area here. There's not just one way to do it. But it's funny to me that going back to when that coaching change was made, the biggest criticism that a lot of people had was, well, why are you promoting a guy from the same staff or you're firing the other guy? It's the same thing.
If he had the answers, why didn't he tell him?
Bring in a new guy. But ironically, the two coaches are so incredibly different, maybe opposite. And I think Dwayne, in a lot of ways, was really... what's another word for uptight? I don't want to say uptight, but high.
Well, he was intense.
He was intense, and it wasn't. And you could sort of feel that. And I think at certain points, especially in the playoffs, I think players felt that. I think it sort of made its way into the locker room, and then there was just everybody was sort of intense and.
Right.
Whereas I think there's a looseness. What Nick brings, and I think the players have really picked up on that, and that's helped them.
I think behind the scenes, though,
whatever it is, Nick Nurse seems to have it. Like, just that kind of rapport with the way he carries himself, that he would be able to walk into a room and, like, own the room.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got a presence to him. I don't think there's any doubt. But I also think he probably picks his spots behind the scenes. What he shows us is one, you know, side of Nick Nurse. And I think it's the side that you would see the majority of the time, even behind closed doors. But he's told this story publicly, like ripping into the team after game one against Orlando last year, ripping into this team about not defending, not committing. If you're going to play like that, you can't do anything. That wasn't just a laid back, you know, jam session with the boys.
He picks his spots.
He picks his spots, and you have to at some point. Right. Like, even the hard-ass coach at some point has got to be, you know, Rosie. And the difference is, it feels like the hard-ass coach usually does that when the team is losing a lot. It's like, wait a minute, now we know that's so disingenuous. You're trying to prop us up. There's no way you're happy. You're miserable all the time. Where Nick Nurse, I think, gives off a vibe like he's committed. He's got a plan. He believes in the plan. He believes in the team. That goes a long way.
And I also think he's really straightforward with the guys. Like, there's no secrets. He's very upfront. No beating around the bush. He says it as it is, and he challenges guys both privately and publicly. It's not, like I said earlier, I don't look at it as calling guys out, but he's not going to sugarcoat it. If a guy isn't playing well, if he needs to play harder, if he's not doing something right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the results have to be there for them to realize why he called them out. And I think the best
you can get away with it now that you're a champion.
Absolutely.
Too.
Well, that goes a long way. But like he called out Kawhi a little bit last year.
Yep.
Like, there were times last year where he said Kawhi's not bringing it, you know, and Kawhi's got to be a little bit more selfish, a little bit more of an assassin out there. I don't remember the exact phrases he was using.
He said mid-season that he was sort of going through the motions a little bit. And yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, players respect that. There's going to be players that don't, that take it the wrong way and maybe slighted by it or upset by it. But I'm not sure those are the guys that you really want anyways. I think how players respond to stuff like that tells you a lot about them. Right. And you want the guy you want Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, a guy who wasn't playing at the beginning of the year, that Nurse says, okay, well, he's not acknowledging and identifying how hard you need to play, how hard we needed to play in order to win a championship. He needs to pick up on that.
Right.
He eventually did, and those are the type of guys you want. You don't want the guys that are going to hear that and say, well, I don't want to play for this guy anymore.
Well, and I think he handled that well because he didn't necessarily single out one guy, like originally early in the season. He said the new guys.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. I think Hollis Jefferson is clearly the guy who got the clue.
15 guys on the roster. It's not hard to figure out who the new guy is.
But, yeah, you're looking at, you know, maybe Matt Thomas.
Stanley Johnson, who might be the other end of the spectrum, a guy who hasn't gotten it.
He hasn't landed, right? Like, right. He hasn't exactly. So, we'll see.
Now, will we know more after this week? Now, they have Orlando. Orlando's got a couple guys not playing tonight, so if they play a good game, they should win. But they got a pretty tough schedule coming up.
You mean the rest of the games aren't against Orlando as well?
Well, it seems that. Don't we wish? But then, don't they have Houston really and tough. Miami and really Utah tough. And
Philly coming Philly. Up again, and then the Clippers will be in town in no time in a couple weeks.
So in 8-9 days, maybe we'll have a greater sense of what they can do.
And it sounds like they could be getting one or both of Lowry and Ibaka back on Sunday against Utah. Good timing for that with the tough schedule coming up.
Right. How do you expect them to handle Lowry the rest of the way? Like, once he's back and at 100%, like, he, I don't know if he's a load management candidate, but, like, his minutes clearly have got to be scaled back. We knew that before he got injured. But at some point, if you want optimal Kyle Lowry come playoff time, and that's where you're going, you got to have a game plan for him.
Yeah, there's enough historical precedent now to know what happens when you overuse Kyle Lowry early in the season. It's happened so many times. There was like 3 or 4 years in a row where it's like, okay, he plays big minutes early in the year. He plays really well until midseason. Then he starts to wear down towards the end of the year. Then in the playoffs, he plays poorly and everyone says, well, he's not a playoff guy. Well, no, it's not that he wasn't a playoff guy. It's that he was playing through.
He's got no legs anymore.
Back injuries or the elbow injury or the wrist injury. There were so many things. I mean, last year he had the thumb thing, but at least they managed his minutes to the point throughout the season where he could he had at least the stamina, the conditioning to fight through it. So, yeah, I think they were flying too close to the sun there early in the season. You can't play this guy 40-plus minutes, at least not at 33. So the minutes come down a little bit, and it's easier to do now that they have depth that they probably didn't even realize that they had. At the same time, as long as you're playing Lowry and Van Vliet together.
That's the thing. They don't have depth at that position.
No. So I think Nick's got to be creative with it. We've got to see some of Terrence Davis at the point, and they've been really pushing that, trying to
Siakam
get him more
at the
there.
Point.
Siakam.
I like that idea, man. But I would experiment with it anyway.
You've got to. But I think the idea is you want, when Lowry comes back, you want at least one of Lowry or Siakam on the floor. If not at all times, most of the time, they're trying to do that right now with Van Vliet and Siakam.
Yep.
So I don't know. I mean, Lowry's going to play a lot, and Lowry is Lowry. Lowry wants to play a lot.
He wants to play, but his body breaks down. I mean, that's what happens.
You got to protect him from himself. That's why this might be, we talked about the blessing in disguise of guys being hurt and other guys stepping up.
Yep.
How about the blessing in disguise of Lowry getting 2-3 weeks of rest in the middle of the season?
And for a finger. Like, it's not his knee, it's not his hip.
Yep.
You know, it's not something
that's an important
slow
point,
because
you can still kind of train. Stay in shape,
yep.
But just keep it fresh. We're not trying to build it back up.
And the Raptors have had a lot of thumb injuries over the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Seriously.
All right, man. Well, we'll catch you on the pre and post tonight.
Will we?
I think so.
Yeah, no, will absolutely.
He gave you a look like you weren't sure.
Are you not a part of it? I just came up here to hang out with you guys.
I assumed you were a part of it. Like, we got the game.
Yeah, I'm not doing that tonight.
Yeah, maybe I should have known.
Our pregame is brief because it's a 7 o'clock start, okay. But I'll be here for halftime and postgame with the great Jim Taddy.
There you go.
Yes, guy.
Josh Lewenberg and the man himself, Jim Taddy.
Thanks, guys.
Good seeing you, buddy. There's our TSN Raptors reporter.